Welcome, friends, to this, the Thursday morning edition of the Grace Hour. Once again, broadcasting live from our studios, which are set up here at the home of the Greater Grace World Outreach in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks for joining us, friends. Great to have you with us on this Thursday morning. We want to remind you at the outset of today's broadcast to subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And we'd like to once again welcome each and every one of you. Hope you'll be able to stay with us for the entire broadcast today. I want to remind you that the phone lines will be open, and if you'd like to, you can address us with your comments or questions live on the air. The telephone numbers for you to dial if you'd like to join us are as follows. Toll free in all of North America, 800-338-7060, and the local number, 410-483-3700. My name is Pastor John Love, joining us in the studio today, Pastor Tom Schaller, and we're ready to get things started, and we hope that you will, again, stay with us. And if you'd like to weigh in on the chat, you can do so and share your questions and comments in that format as well as the phone lines being open during the entire broadcast. Our theme this week in the Grace Hour has been healthy basic life skills, and today we will focus on this theme and subject matter, morality. What is morality, and how does the Christian interpret it, and how is morality, well, is there a difference between the morality that we find in our culture today and the morality that we find in the lives of believers? So clearly this is a subject matter that touches all of us. And Pastor Schaller, as we get things started today, it does beg the question, you know, is morality important? Is it something that is the equivalent of salvation, or are they on two different levels altogether?
There's an important philosophical orientation needed on the subject. One is man universally in every culture, in every era of history, a moral creature? And what is that universal moral law that he recognizes by instinct or tuition? Well, we said before the program that, you know, if I'm standing in line at the bank and somebody cuts in front of me, you know, I say, hey, you know, or I forgive them, or I don't want to make it. But there's something that bothers me about that. Or at school, you have a friend, they're in third grade, you are in third grade, and they say, you know, I gave you a piece of my apple, could I have a piece of your orange? Right? When something is wrong, why do we know that? When something isn't fair, how about as kids? That's not fair. That's not fair. Like, what are they talking about? But morality. So stealing money, stealing somebody's wife, borrowing a car, damaging the car, bringing it back and say, thanks for letting me use your car, and walking away. Hey, what happened to the fender here? Sorry about that. Okay, sorry, that. Thank you. But I have to pay for that, or the insurance company does. So running away in the face of battle, like in the military, when you're all in a battle and you're moving forward against the enemy and somebody runs away, jeopardizing the whole program, you know, that is that moral or immoral? Is it a violation of some law written? I'm talking Aborigine people, 9th century Tibetan people, you know, 13th century Islamic people. Do they love their families? Do they know when something is wrong and when something is right? So this is a key to the meaning of the universe, the fact that we are not just globs of protoplasm with no sense of right and wrong. Why do we ask these questions, and why do we live together processing these offenses and also sacrifices? When somebody comes to your door as a neighbor and knocks on your door and says, I have a gift for you. Here's $1,000 gift. I just want to give you $1,000. And you just say, why? Why? And they just say, it's a gift. It's something that's in my heart. I want to help you out and your family. Thank you very much. So you have many elements to morality. And I don't think that we need to really start with the Bible and what the Bible says in the law, but instead start with the human race and talk about how morality is a big function of life. And it can't be denied.
No. And if we have been made in the image and likeness of God, and of course that does relate to the Bible, but if that's the case, that makes us moral beings. And we can't escape that reality. As you said, there's always that sense of right and wrong. It's perhaps it's because of our conscience, which God gave us. We read that in the scriptures. But a sense of right and wrong, and this is to clarify the difference between moral people and justified people, because there is a world of difference between the two, isn't there? You can be a moral person, and I think in the minds of many people, whether they are believers or unbelievers, in most cases unbelievers, they would say, if there is a God, not necessarily believing that there might be, but if there were, then he would have to accept me on the basis of my morality, my being a good person. But there's something even wrong with that, isn't there?
Yeah, well, the problem is that morality could be telling me what is right and wrong, but can't really fix the violations of the moral law. So let's say the law or morality itself, if you do your best and you live a good moral life, there are for sure violations of that moral law that happen in your life. You know, you don't do what you should do. You shouldn't. You fail to be true to your own conscience. You do lie. You do have hypocrisy. You do. You are dishonest. You are not fair. You know, like when you were a kid and somebody would yell, you know, that's not fair, that's not fair. And you'd say, so what? You know, you don't care. Yeah, you know, but there is the problem is that morality has a function, but it cannot bring to me that real thing that it is pointing to. Like to say that I have a cancer, I have a CAT scan, they do a diagnosis of my body, they tell me that I have a cancer. The CAT scan has a function, but it's to diagnose, not to cure. And morality can tell me that there is a problem here, but it cannot fix the problem. It cannot really give me what I really am made for. So morality is a message to us from God about ourselves, about the world we live in, about other people, and is how our civilization is held together. But it cannot bring that civilization to God. It can lead me to the need, but I must find God by not the morality, but by the real cure. And that's what our message of the gospel is.
Mm-hmm. And even if you take a step further and go from morality to God's laws and the keeping of God's laws, which is a major point of reference in the lives of unbelievers, they might not know God, but they do understand that God has a system of morality or laws And if they can simply keep those laws, then they'll find acceptance before God. The problem is, as you just mentioned, we can't keep those laws. And then, of course, the thought is in the mind of an unbeliever, well, then I will do enough good works and I will live enough of a good moral life to cancel all of the bad decisions that I've made in life. But that doesn't work either, because this is all relative, right? God says, I don't even deal in the realm of that which is relative. I deal in the realm of absolutes. So when you stand before God, you have to either be absolutely righteous, because if you're, you know, relatively righteous, it's not going to find accept. You're not going to find acceptance with God.
Yeah, there are some things in life that demand like 100%. Like there are some things that just, you know, illustrate that it doesn't work unless it's all 100%. You can't be halfway on an airplane. You get in the plane or you're outside of the plane, and the plane takes off, and you cannot be halfway. You cannot be halfway in a car, and you cannot be half right and half wrong, or even 99%. It has to be that either it is this way or it is not, you know. And in the same way with regards to what God is looking for is righteousness, and it's got to be 100%. So that's why Christ came. He was righteous, became righteous, was righteous, lived a righteous life, then became unrighteous for the sake of us, taking, our sin upon himself, so that we might be made righteous. No, that righteousness was not made by our constant effort and making good moral decisions. Because by our morality, which is blemished, it is enough there to point to the fact that we are made with a certain design and a certain purpose. It is there for this, to live a civilized life and to live our 70 years on the earth for a purpose, and that is to bring us to, you know, bring us somewhere. We weren't made to live 70 years and die. We are made to live here and find why are we here, to find. And morality is one of the keys, and a key to the universe, to be honest, to say, I am moral. Why am I moral? It must be that the one that made me is moral. It must be that God is moral. God is, and God is the one that cares about this subject. You know, I gave you a piece of my orange, give me a piece of your apple. That's written in our DNA. It's universal. And therefore, then, why are we made this way? Well, because there is right and wrong in the universe. And God is the one that's saying, I am righteous, I am right, and you need to know me, walk with me. I will make you righteous so that you can be a partaker of heaven.
Amazing. So we could say that the Christian worldview is based on these two foundational principles. Number one, God exists, and we acknowledge that. Number two, that God has spoken to us in the Bible. If we don't have these two presuppositions as the starting point as believers, then we're just like everybody else. We're out there looking for, you know, or trying to find objectivity in an ocean of subjectivity, which is why we hear all of these ideas from unsaved people. Well, this is what I think, and this is the direction I think my life is going in. This is why I believe that we exist. It can just lead to all kinds of foolishness. They all seem, these ideas, all of this subjectivity comes out of a darkened mind, someone that does not know God and has never been born of the Spirit. But we have this great advantage. We know that God exists, and we believe that he has spoken to us through the Scriptures. And that takes us, it takes us really into the presence of God, into a relationship with God. As you said, if you're merely living on the basis of the law, just laws, which the natural man will embrace and does embrace, or at least tries to, but the law is like a mirror that you look into. It can show you that you're filthy and you're dirty, but it has no power to clean you up.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. There's a couple of things you said that I want to go back to. One is, I forgot it.
Didn't make that much of an impression.
It did. It's my age, I think. Okay. Can you go back to the first thing you were saying?
Just how those two foundational principles.
Okay.
God exists.
And then the word. Oh, yeah. Word, okay, I got it now. The abstract, when you lose the moral bearings, the moral reference, and you want to disregard it or get rid of it, out of actually the rebellion of the human heart, I don't want it that way. This is my world, my way. You know, this is what I want. So I interpret reality my own. You won't be happy. It won't work. You can't deny. I'm a bowl of cornflakes, you know. That's what I believe. You know, I'm a, and who are you to tell me that I am not a bowl of cornflakes? Well, you are so much like wrapped up in your own mind and ways that you're not facing reality and you're interpreting reality on your own terms. And somebody will pay for that. And that probably are the people that are immediately close to you and you. You are a bowl of cornflakes and people that are around you that want to reinforce that idea and embrace your lie, that in your, you know, it's like the story about the person in the backseat of the car that's an atheist, and when the car goes in a spin on a snowy driveway, on a snowy highway, and then they cry out to God, you know, that their atheism is only, you know, paper thin, and it's like, really, you are a bowl of cornflakes, you know, like, or you are from another planet or whatever you want to say. So yeah, the lie, believe the lie, but you're cheating yourself. All your time, your precious time in life, your value, the way you are made, the uniqueness of your person, and as you tell your lie and live in your lie and conform your world to your lie, then your world will one day collapse on you. So it's a fool. It's a fool's world. And why be a fool? You know, the proverb tells us. So we go from morality and like changing the rules and contradicting what the moral nature is in my heart. Let's read Romans 2:14-15, Pastor.
Sure.
You have it there.
I do. And Paul writes and says, "For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law are a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, their thoughts meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another."
We got to unpack that for a minute. Mm. Okay, I want to focus on those two words. The law written in the heart. Now, they are Gentiles. That means they don't have the Bible. They do not have the Bible. Some, if they are educated Gentiles or pagans who are educated, like Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, the philosophers of that era, the Greek mentality, okay? Then you have a Roman mentality, which is what, and other pagan people, that, which have their pagan gods and so on, okay? So in every case, they have a law written in their heart. And what are they doing but accusing and excusing? Now, those two words are different from each other. Accusing and excusing. How are they different? They are the premier evidence of something written in your heart. Let's make an example. I'm a waiter in an Italian restaurant carrying a plate of spaghetti or a whole tray of food on my shoulder. I'm walking through the tables in the restaurant. I trip over a man's leg in the restaurant. I fall forward. The food goes everywhere, including on my head. I'm on the floor, turn around, and I look at the man that tripped me. And my immediate question is, what?
Why did you do that?
Yeah, did you do it on purpose? Did you put your leg out and trip me on purpose? Now, if he did it on purpose, he's accused. Mm-hmm. But if I look at him and maybe I can read his face and his words, his body language, and he says, oh, I'm so sorry. It was an accident. I can't believe that happened. I'm so sorry. He's excused. But if he did it on purpose, he's accused. If it's an accident, he's excused. Where is this law coming from, written in our hearts? God wrote it in our hearts, yeah. And it's working all the time. It's an evidence that we are moral and we are made with this morality, and we should not deny it, but understand what is it there for. It's to lead me to something greater. It's to say that I have a problem with myself and with other people, even with obeying and honoring the law that is written in my heart, because to be honest, sometimes I have tripped somebody, and it was wrong, and I knew it. Or to be honest, I did steal, or I did lie, and you go to bed knowing that you did. So, yeah, that is a fundamental part of the world we live in, and we should understand that as believers. We haven't even gotten into the Bible yet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, the gospel and the Bible and what the message of the Bible is, because all of this groundwork for our lives and understanding is written in our DNA, and we should talk about it and admit that it is there.
Absolutely. It seems like a couple of generations ago, things like divorce, homosexuality, adultery, an immoral lifestyle, these were considered wrong. These were condemned by our culture and society. It doesn't seem to be the case any longer. They are now, you know, it's not a problem. That's only a problem with religious fanatics or Bible-thumping Christians. But something has changed, and it's almost as if what you just described, this moral consciousness placed in our hearts by God, has been replaced by what some people call social consensus. Mm-hmm. That seems to be their God now. And where does that come from? The culture now calls the shots morality, as far as morality is concerned. Mm.
I have questions about that. I know that's what the propaganda machine is telling us in Hollywood and social media, and also politicians are in on it. But if you go to, you know, middle class America, if you go to the Midwest, if you go to the common people, they are filled with morality and the understanding of things that are wrong and right. They want to have traditional families. The whole thing about this rise in numbers, and there is really a moving away from God, I believe that, in some way, and the propaganda is working in our society. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, replacing it, I don't think so. I think that there's in varying degrees, but every generation, if you went back hundreds of years, you still find, you find a liberal swing, and then you find a conservative one. You find a liberal direction and then a conservative one. So generally, like, we have swings, and like, who's saying what and what is being said. So the danger of the time we live in is this social media machine that is able to speak so loudly to young people and groom them and cultivate in them, but they cannot escape the amazing reality of the conscience. And they cannot escape the fact that there are things that are wrong. Now, in our country, we assume everybody's going along with this woke ideology and mentality in the world, but it isn't so. You know, Japan knows better. Asia, you have Africa, you have, you know, different countries with different messages. And for us to be isolated as a country, we believe that we are like out in the forefront and we are the cutting edge in society, but our edge is not a good one. We have a message that is being rejected by many parts of the world, the Islamic world, the immoral message of the United States of America, the immoral message of a broken family, the immoral message of this sexual confusion. This immoral message is not being embraced by actually billions of people. So we may find ourselves more and more isolated and also not cutting edge, not mainline, not leading the Western world, but actually maybe even the Western world in some way, you know, going in a bad direction that violates our very foundation, you know. So I there's just a few words on it.
Yeah, it does seem like if you have that as a premise and you're deriving your morality based upon the consensus of society, you're building your life on shifting sand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like you keep moving the goalposts.
Mm-hmm.
How can you have a game and mm-hmm. how can you have a competition on the field of play if you keep moving the goalposts?
Yeah.
But the boundaries don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't add up.
Yeah, yeah.
And doesn't it lead to what we read about in the book of Judges in the 17th chapter, where all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but what it leads to is every man does what's right in his own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so dangerous.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, well, there's a great quote by Chesterton that before Christianity, paganism was the best. But then Christianity came in, it was better. And there's never been anything better ever since. Let me repeat that. Before Christianity came, paganism was the best. Christianity came, it was better. And ever since, there's never been anything better. So when we leave our Christianity, it'll be worse. It'll be worse than what we have. And people should wake up and realize that morality is written in your heart. It should bring you to the place where you see there must be something more. The moral one that made me a moral creature, God, is speaking to me and saying, you have failed. You are immoral. You are not righteous. Come to me, and you will find me and have a relationship with me, because I am the righteous God.
Mm. And that leads us to the 16th verse in Romans chapter 2, which says that there is a day coming when God will judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ. So it really comes down to Christ, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Pastor Stevens used to talk a lot about the difference between morality and spirituality. And they're not the same. You can be moral, but you might not be spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't the goal for the believer to become a spiritually minded person? mm-hmm. which will produce the morality. In other words, the right belief system is going to produce the right behavior in a person's life.
Yes, yes. Okay. So the best illustration of that is the woman taken in adultery. So what happened in the story was she was taken, she was caught in the act, she was brought before the crowd. There was a whole crowd of men ready to stone her. They brought her to Jesus to test Jesus and to see will he live by the law. So it was a tough one. It was a tough one. I mean, for God, nothing is tough. But if you really look at it on the face of it, it was a tough one. All right, so they said, now Moses told us to stone this woman. What do you say? And the pressure is right there. Mm. So morally, by law, first she violated the law. She committed adultery. The penalty was stoning. That, by the law, is Jesus going to do this? So morally, that's the picture. Then he writes on the ground. And then he says, he that is without sin casts the first stone. You might be moral, you might be embracing the moral law, but are you able to execute judgment and stone the woman? Like, are you going to do that? If you are without sin, throw the first stone. So then they all leave, and then he says, where are your accusers? She said, there is no man. And then he said, neither do I condemn you. So that's grace. And then go and sin no more. That's instruction and teaching for her future. So her life has changed. So morality has a function, but it cannot bring me all the way to where what we're really going toward. What's the point? It's to bring me to God. Bring me to guilt, for me to admit I am guilty, that I do recognize you could stone me, and Jesus was the one who could have done that to her, because he was without sin. But he didn't. He gave her grace and set her free. Because God didn't make us to condemn us. He came to save us. He didn't come to bring us under the law to, he came to bring us under the law so that we would be found guilty before him in our consciences and admit, come on, you got to admit it. You got to say, I am guilty. You got to, come on, you got to be in the truth and then, but receive the grace and be born again, be saved.
That story in the Bible, it never ceases to amaze us because you have, you know, the moral agents who found the woman in the act of adultery, dragging her into the presence of Christ. Then you have the woman who is immoral, clearly, obviously. But they're all immoral.
Yeah.
And Jesus, you know, it's almost like there are some people in the world today that think that they are righteous. But it's self-righteousness. It's not the righteousness of God. And they are the ones that are quick to accuse what, in their estimate, are the unrighteous. But as you just pointed out, everybody has sinned and come short of the glory of God. And God wants to see people acknowledge that. And then the one in the midst of the moral crowd, or the ones that thought they were moral, and the immoral woman, was the only one who we should be focused on. Mm-hmm. He's the only one that can forgive people of their sins. He's the only one that can give people a righteousness that makes them acceptable to God. So it's really all about him. It all comes down to the gospel message, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And that gospel message is for God to declare us righteous when we aren't. And saying, if you can do this by faith, all I'm asking from you is faith. Trust me, trust me, and I will make you righteous.
And the Bible actually calls it, in Romans 5:17, the gift of righteousness. Mm. You can't earn it. There is no human merit that will bring you to that place. You must receive it as a gift of grace. But what's amazing is that what that gift of righteousness can produce in a person's life once they've received it is the very essence of an upright, moral, acceptable life before God.
Yeah. if you are spiritual, what happens is love is the fruit of the Spirit, and you will actually care about your neighbor, have peace in your own heart, and enjoy the law and the order of life. You enjoy obedience. You enjoy doing things right. You don't anymore, you no longer do you really enjoy lying or cheating or deceiving. You actually enjoy a divine order and the law, the rules. You enjoy God, so that as you live, you know, obeying and following the rules of a swim club, the rules of a YMCA, the rules of a school, the rules of a community, you actually start to enjoy doing the right thing and enjoy it. It's easier. Right? But why do you enjoy it? Because you're spirit-filled. So you're spirit-filled, so you are. Are you moral? Yeah, but my life isn't focused on morality. It's more focused on the relationship with God, who is moral and leads me in enjoying and being obedient to what he said. You know, if you love me, you will keep my commandments, he said. So, like, it, but it's rooted in the relationship. But if you don't have God and you just have morality, it'll mess you up. I mean, it'll toss you around. There'll be things that you feel you should do, but you don't do, and then you feel bad about that. And then there'll be things that you should do that you do, then you feel proud about that. You're proud that you are righteous and obeying the rules and everything. You're proud about it, and then you judge other people. And that's not, doesn't work either. That's not fun. That's not joy. So in both cases, in morality, the moral life is not the target. Knowing God, walking with God, and then when you have God, then you do have a moral life.
Yeah. You brought it out and illustrated it last night in our church service, and to use the example of drinking alcohol. Mm-hmm. You know, people, I would imagine most people think the reason why we don't drink alcohol, and we don't, praise God,
yeah,
is because the rules and the regulations of our church says you can't. But that's not the reason why we don't consume alcohol. Yeah. Is it?
No, it isn't.
It's we.
Do you remember what we said?
Well, we want to be able to enjoy our lives.
Yeah, right.
And be aware of it.
Yeah, right. I don't drink because when I have a good relationship with somebody, I want to know that I have a good relationship.
Yes.
When I'm having a good time, I want to know that I'm having a good time. I don't want to be intoxicated and not knowing. Am I having a good time? Or oh, yeah, I'm having a good time because right now I'm an idiot. You know, yeah, that's how I feel. I feel, yeah, I'm having a good time. But really, are you having a good time? Then why did you, you know, why did you get in a fight with somebody? Why, yeah, did you, you know?
Because the nature of alcohol is it's gonna control you.
Yes.
Well, wouldn't you rather be in control of your own life?
Yeah, yeah.
Rather, right, than letting something else control you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember vividly during a Christmas party when I graduated after high school and I'm working for a company and they had the big Christmas party. And people there knew I was a Christian and they knew that I was different. And I didn't have to announce it. I didn't have to talk. Of course, I took every opportunity to share the gospel when it was present. But at this Christmas party, I remember my supervisor coming up to the table where I was sitting, and he took a bottle of beer, and he kind of slammed it on the table, and he just said, "Love, drink it. I know you want it." And I took that opportunity to say to him, his name was Tony, and I said, "Tony, I don't want it."
Yeah.
And the reason why I don't want it is I don't need it.
Yeah,
I said, it doesn't have anything to do with any rules or regulations that I'm obliged to keep. It has to do with a relationship that I have with God. That opened the door for a meaningful relationship with him to share the gospel.
Wow.
Because he wanted to know what makes you tick.
Right.
And I know that what makes you tick is the same thing that makes everybody else tick. But it isn't. It's a relationship with God.
Yeah.
That changes everything.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Very good story.
Yeah, it's
beautiful.
True.
Beautiful.
We don't need it.
No, maybe a couple more things to say about it. Morality in itself, we understand that people can be bored, actually frustrated, and actually rebellious. And a lot of the rebellion you see is like actually a cry out for God. The rebellion and breaking the law or living a sinful life and just doing it, you know, kind of with a nasty spirit, maybe rebellious or just being compliant to like the culture and just do what they say. But when you have a relationship with God, there's fire in your belly. You start and end up enjoying and loving God and enjoying Him. And at His right hand are pleasures forevermore that the moral man doesn't know about. Like at God's right hand is the living Christ, the Savior of the world, the joy, the love, the life, the peace at His right hand. That the moral man doesn't know about that. Mm-hmm. So he thinks we are like super moral.
Right.
But he doesn't understand the fountain, the source, the real reality behind our lives is not morality. It is the nature of God and the Spirit of God that brings us into our lives.
Amen.
Yeah. Well,
on that note, we'll wrap up today's broadcast, friends. And just to give you the opportunity, perhaps you've never received the gift of righteousness. Maybe you've never been born again. Take the opportunity today to ask Christ to come into your heart, to give you that new nature. You can, you know, step away from morality and can begin a life and a relationship with Christ by faith. Just ask Him to come into your heart, cleanse you of your sins. He paid for all those sins on the cross and offers you what you really need, which is the gift of righteousness. Thanks so much for joining us, friends. We'll be back tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Grace Hour. And don't forget to subscribe to The Grace Hour on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Till tomorrow, may God bless you.